You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray here in the studio with Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop, and we will start in the Premier League, where Manchester City were out to respond to Arsenal's big win over Chelsea, and respond they did with four goals against Brighton. Kevin De Bruyne scoring his first ever header in the Premier League. It was a wonderful goal as well. A Phil Foden free kick via a deflection, making it 2-0. Phil Foden would then make it 3-0, with Brighton determined to play out from the back, which proved costly, and soon enough it was 4-0 thanks to Julian Alvarez. Obviously, the Premier League title race red hot as it stands right now. Manchester City leapfrogging Liverpool and moving to second in the table, 1 point and one game behind Arsenal. Let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf to talk a little bit more about this. That was quite the response tonight, Frank.
It was, and I loved the De Bruyne's goal with the pass from Foden from the outside of the foot, or maybe it was Bernardo Silva, I don't remember, but the Walker's cross and the header reminds me Mr. Van Persie when he scored the one beautiful header with the dive. That was beautiful, and for me that was it. After, you have a free kick, which wasn't a free kick, so a help of the referee, and after you have the help of Brighton, so an easy win for Manchester City. Nothing to complain about City. They did their game, but the game was over after, 30 minutes. And they are on their money time. They're ready. We know that they love to do that. They showed it last season, the season before, and I see them, fighting a lot. But what they did today was good enough. But I wasn't impressed because, it was more the referee who killed the game in the second with the second goal, and after Brighton who killed himself with the third one.
Is it fair for Frank to bring up those controversial moments?
Absolutely. I thought they were telling on the game, and while we could point to not just that incident, I thought Brighton had very good cause for two penalties, not just one, Gross and Pedro. The truth is, the better team won. Brighton were trying to out-City Manchester City, got themselves in all kinds of trouble as a result. But if you're Brighton, you can't help but think about the what-ifs. What if that second isn't given and the score remains at one? What if we were awarded either one of those two penalties, the earlier one in particular, Pedro and Rodri? What if that were given early in the second half? How does that change the momentum of the game? Because at that point, let's be honest, the air had all but left the stadium. That all of a sudden gives Brighton something to play for. That all of a sudden maybe puts Manchester City back on their heels.
So let's take a look at the foul that was given, but perhaps shouldn't have been given in this game, which is going to come up as one of the controversial moments. And obviously you mentioned a couple of other penalty calls that they could have had here. This in the 24th minute, LA.
So it's not a foul. Phil Foden slips. And Phil Foden thinks that he's been taken down, but he has not. It's not a foul. Referee gives it. And while I agree, look, it's not a foul, this thing's can happen in a game. Now you have to defend if you're Brighton, and you have an opportunity to defend it properly. And so while we like to point the finger at the referee, and rightfully so, because he does make a mistake in this particular call, we also have to say Brighton, as the ball is being played and Phil Foden is taking the free kick, you have Pascal Gross, who is supposed to be part of, if not the wall, he's just off the wall a little bit. What does he do? He turns his back to the ball. So look, yeah, Brighton, complain to the referee all you want, but you can complain about yourself as well. And so to the point that Frank was making is, once we get beyond that second goal and we go on to the third goal, I love and appreciate the way that Brighton likes to play the game. And they like to play out of the back. And when it does work, it's great. But when you have a high-pressing team like Manchester City, once you break through that first line of pressure, don't come back to the pressure. Take the game into the middle third. You broke the pressure, now take it into the middle third. What Brighton do in the third goal is Little pass, little pass, little pass, backwards, sideways, sideways, backwards. What do you think is going to happen? Eventually, a pass is going to come up short. Eventually, you're going to lose the ball. Eventually, you're going to give up a goal. So while I appreciate their style of play, at some point, it's just too much. You just have to read the game for what it is, and you can't just hang on to, well, this is the way we play the game, so that's how we're going to live and die with it. No, you can live with it, but you don't have to die with it. So it becomes a stubborn approach. And it wasn't just the defenders doing it. It was the goalkeeper as well. And it's nice and cute and beautiful when the goalkeeper is, like, doing drag backs and step overs. You know what you're doing? You're inviting more pressure and inviting more pressure and inviting more pressure. Eventually, pressure becomes too much. They lose the ball in a bad area, and they give up a goal.
Frank?
Yeah, they played Manchester City game. Manchester City was ready for that and was expecting that. So stubborn is the right adjective for Brighton tonight. When you feel, and you have some experienced player like Dunk, I think they should say, okay, guys, it doesn't work. It's Manchester City. We're going to be caught in our game at some point. So play further up. Play maybe the second ball like we used to play and start playing your game and the way you know how to play and, you know, very well play with passes and everything, but further up on the field, not in your own box. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it can happen sometimes. Sometimes you can do that. But it's like, yeah, it's like being really caught into that with a stubborn mindset. I don't get it. Really, I don't get it. Maybe it wasn't enough in our time. We didn't want to take any risk. Now it's too much. You go to the extreme and it doesn't work. And so many times I see young kids with no experience being caught in that, and it stay for your lifelong as a football player. You will be remembered with the guy who made that stupid mistake. But that stupid mistake is the responsibility of the coach.
There are a couple of things to this pass and the ball out to the back that I think set City apart. One, personnel. And I've made the point that I think Edison is the best at it. And City are the best at using the goalkeeper for one reason in particular. Edison's passing range. You try to press high up the park, as so many do, or as City were doing with Steele, what Edison will do is drill a ball over the top 60 yards and all of a sudden you're backtracking. Cue Kyle Walker overlapping and the Julian Alvarez, what was that, the fourth goal. That's why you cannot press City as high up as City were pressing Brighton today, because they will beat you over the top. The second thing, and to Ali's point, is once you pass out of that pressure, and again, City do it better than anybody else. Can you imagine Phil Foden or Kevin De Bruyne in this instance picking the ball up 10 yards ahead of the centre-backs after they've broken that pressure and going back? Absolutely not. Every time City break that pressure, it just opens up ahead because you've got runners going every which way, and Kevin De Bruyne can find those passes. Kevin De Bruyne will play a 40 or 50-yard ball forward 99 times to the ones that he plays a 5-yard ball backwards. And that's where I think everybody else gets it wrong, or nobody else gets it as good as City is. Nobody is anywhere near as effective as they are.
Well, Manchester City are the VIP elite level of that, mm-hmm. of that possession, of breaking through pressure with their possession. Brighton are the lesser version of that. Still good to look at, still a nice style, but you have to understand that if you're playing against the elite, VIP level of the same style that you're trying to play, maybe you make adjustments. Maybe you change a little bit. Not all your personality, not all your makeup as a team, but maybe you don't take unnecessary risk. Maybe you put the ball over there and have Danny Welbeck hang on to it. When is Manchester City at their most vulnerable? When you're able to press through break through that first initial pressure, and then you go on the counter because they committed so many numbers forward into the pressure, so many numbers forward with possession. Now that they don't have the ball, you go on the counter, you expose that. Did Brighton ever try to do that? Absolutely not. And so then he was all City all the time.
You know, Frank, that you have the you have the possibility to judge a little bit more. De Zerbi is a new player, is a new coach, is talented, the way he makes Brighton playing is great. But because of that game, I was expecting to see something different. Maybe him trying to do something else to make sure that you don't go into what Manchester City is expecting. And I didn't see that. I would have loved to see the Zerbi changing his game, saying to this player, you know what, we're going to play further up, we're going to give pressure, because we know that City doesn't like that. When they have guys and they have to press, yes, of course, the goalkeeper is very good at launching long balls like Xhaka mentioned before. But that was for the fourth goal. I would have loved to see the Zerbi, and the Zerbi missed that opportunity to show to the world that he's ready to maybe go to a bigger club, because he has other options. And he showed that he has only one option. It's good, but against elite club, VIP club, it doesn't work.
Well, as mentioned, the title race is red hot right now, and this weekend it could be about to get even hotter. This is the odds right now. We're taking a look at it. What are your thoughts on how things are shaping up right now, Xhaka?
Listen, it's the amazing thing is we've said all season long that this is a lesser version of Manchester City than we've become used to. Yet we sit here and they have not lost a game dating back to the turn of the year, I think it is. City, for all their faults, for all the issues that they may have, being a lesser version of themselves, this point of the season is they just know how to get the job done. So it's almost impossible to look past them at this point. I think Liverpool are all but out of the title race at this point. Arsenal, it's while playing the best football in the league, as I've said, City, it's in their hands, and that is the last place you want it to be.
You see them winning out, LA? City?
Well, yes. They have the best option that anybody else has. I mean, look, I think what's important about today's game in particular for Manchester City is that because it was over after 35, 40 minutes, realistically, then if you're Pep Guardiola, you're able to withdraw players. You're able to make changes. You're able to relieve some stress. There are going to be a lot of stressful moments, both for the mind and the body, in this close out of the season. And so if you have fresh minds, if you have fresh bodies, you give yourself the best opportunity available. So it's important that teams like Arsenal and Manchester City are able to go through these games in which it becomes a glorified training session. So that when it counts, when you need that small margin that may just be the difference between you winning the league or not, you're fresh and your legs are there and your mind is there and your heart is there. Manchester City, I think, should be the favorites because of the pedigree, because of the experience, because of what they've done. Arsenal are right there. And I think what Arsenal should be very mindful of, let's make this as difficult as possible for Manchester City, as stressful as possible for Manchester City. Let's not just give it away. Let's force them to be better from here on out.
Frank, what are your thoughts on how we're seeing things right now?
Well, so far, you know, and since the beginning of the season, I see City, and as I explained just before, I think they are already in the money time, and they are who they are, and we all know that they are ready for the fight. I think Arsenal, as Ali just alluded, can put a big pressure if they win against Spurs, which I doubt. Because having seen Everton, you know, winning the derby against Liverpool, it's going to give a big idea of ruining Arsenal chances from Spurs. So it can happen that we have a big turn of event during the weekend, and seeing City having an easy way to win the title. But yeah, maybe if Arsenal wins against Tottenham, we'll have a suspense. Otherwise, it could be over. Because I think City plays within less than 72 hours. They play against Nottingham Forest. If they win and Arsenal loses, it's kind of over.
Okay, well, big weekend this weekend, particularly for Arsenal. It's the North London Derby. Yes, it's away from home, but Arteta's men have the best away records in the Premier League this season. Frank saying Spurs are going to win this one, though. I'm going for Arsenal, and the two guys here are both saying it will be a draw. Frank will be back with us a little later on Extra Time. You can catch it every single day over on our YouTube channel.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. And don't forget, it's the FA Cup final, May 25th at Wembley, Man City against Manchester United for the second year running. And one man who knows all about winning the FA Cup with Manchester United is Juan Mata. We're delighted to be joined by Juan now from San Diego here in the States promoting Manchester United Summer Tour. Juan, thank you so much for being with us. Can you tell us a little bit about the things you're going to be doing over the next few days?
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm here in San Diego with United, as you can see, presenting the game that they play on the 31st of July against Betis in the Snapdragon Stadium. And just enjoying the city, visiting the community, visiting some schools, hospitals, going to the San Diego Wave game in the stadium. So it's all fun.
Juan, just looking ahead to, well, Manchester United's game against Betis, will Manchester United be taking the field as defending FA Cup champions? Do you see it?
Hopefully, I see it. I can imagine it. Yeah, I know it's going to be tough. I know how Manchester City is at the moment, how the way they're playing, we could see it today. But, you know, I've played some finals with United, and this is a club that in finals is very different to what we are. We are a different breed when we are close to winning a trophy. So hopefully we can make life difficult for this great Man City team, and we can win a trophy in a season that we know we are not where we want to be in the Premier League, but we still have a chance to play for a trophy, and I think that's really important.
You better be different, Juan. You better be different in the final. Look, Juan, let's just say that I have all the resources in the world, right? All available to me, and I'm giving that to you. And I'm saying, Juan, the decision. You're the decision. Yeah, well, you're welcome. You are the decision maker at Manchester United. But don't thank me just yet. You're the decision maker at Manchester United, and you are going to be the one in charge of getting this club to where it belongs. What do you do first?
I mean, this is a very difficult question because I don't know if that situation will ever happen. I think your trust, by the way, and probably I will hire you first. Just give
back. Right, there you go.
He's got no resources. Don't worry. Yeah. This is a hypothetical.
I think the club now with the new ownership, as you know, focusing on the footballing side, it's looking good, and hopefully the future will be bright. Sir Jim is going to make some decisions, and hopefully they're going to be good ones. And I think, you know, he's trying to bring United with where we all think it should be, which is fighting for the biggest trophies, Champions League, the Premier League, and hopefully he can do it with his team. So I think the future is bright. If I see the squad, there are young players there that are playing at a high level now already. So hopefully they can keep developing and performing for the club.
And obviously, Juan, as you said, you know that there's some good players in that squad and they're developing. But Manchester United overall this season hasn't been a good one for them. They're sixth right now. What do you think the main problems have been?
Well, it's clear when you are in that position that you have not been consistent enough in your results. So, of course, we are all disappointed with the way we are performing on the Premier League and with the points that we have. But, you know, I always try to be positive. I always focus on being positive while I was playing there. And the thing is, with United, you're not having a great season, but you still have the chance to play for FA Cup. Last season, They won a trophy, they play another final, and they qualified third for Champions League. So a bad season for United, I know that it seems super bad, but still they're playing for the FA Cup, which is the second most important trophy in England. I think we should value that too.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I tell you, we picked the right man to be the spokesperson for Manchester United.
One of the complaints around this Manchester United is a lack of leadership. And you could probably go back to Sir Alex Ferguson days as to this Man U not really looking themselves and looking for that big personality. Is there that player in the dressing room? Is there a need? Given Ali's resources, handing off to you?
Well, I can tell you that for me, there is a great leader in there right now, which is the captain, is Bruno. I should tell to all young players to look up to him. I cannot tell you how important he is for the club, and not only because of what he's done in the last game, scoring 2 goals and winning the game, but his consistency within the years that he's been playing for the club is just incredible. And he's a top player, but he's even better as a person. So for me, the culture of the club should be built around him, and he's a great example for all the new generation, the players that are playing now for the team, Garnacho, Maino, Højlund, to look up to him, the way he trains, the way he behaves. And for me, you know, he's the one that is always there for the team. He can play better or worse, but he's always there with the right attitude. And for me, that's what being a Manchester United player is.
I think I know the answer already, because obviously you're wearing Manchester United gear here, but who wins a league title first? Your former team Chelsea or your former team Manchester United?
Yeah. You like good questions. the difficult thing for both clubs is the way that all the clubs are performing at the moment. So we know the consistency that Man City is having over the years. And for me, the sign of a great club, of a club that is doing the right things on the pitch, is the one that if don't win, it's second or third. So I think the club first needs to focus on getting closer, like Arsenal is doing. Of course, Arsenal a couple of years ago was far away from winning, and now they're very close. And I think United, hopefully with the new direction in the football side, can do that. Chelsea might do that too with all the investment they've done and the coach they have and the younger players that they have signed. But the thing is that Man City is performing so well. It's also interesting to see how Liverpool is going to develop with the big change that they're going to go through. So I think we're going to be all fighting with Man City to take them off that first position at the moment.
So Valencia is going to win the title
first. I wish to.
Hey, Juan, let me give you an easier one. How excited are you about young players like Maino and Garnacho?
It's always really nice to see players that, you know, with 18, 19 years old, they look mature and they're performing week in, week out. If you see also other clubs, they have always younger players, so that means that in the academies they're working really well. Manchester United has always been a club known for having a lot of homegrown players and academy players. So, yeah, I mean, I'm watching this goal from Garnacho and it's unbelievable. And I think they have the potential to grow even more. Playing for Manchester United is not easy, we all know that. So they need to be able to have challenging moments like they're having at the moment. But for me, the sign of a great player and a mature player is how strong you can keep your mindset in the challenging moments, and these guys seem to be doing that, and hopefully they can do it even more, and they help the club to win important trophies.
And while there's a lot to be excited about with Manchester United's young players, one other player, Marcus Rashford, has really struggled to find his form of last season. What do you put that down to? What advice would you give to somebody like Marcus Rashford, kind of given that the struggles 1 year on?
Yeah, Marcus is a great guy. We had a great relationship, and you know, when he broke through, of course he was a wonder kid and scoring many goals. Last season he scored an incredible amount of goals. So we all know his potential, and he knows himself how good he can be when he finds this consistency in his mind and of course, if he's not injured, which is happening often with him at the moment. So I think the club knows that they have a great player in there. He's shown it in the past. I think he's motivated also for the Euros and to show his quality to the country. And hopefully he can perform well, because Man United with him at his top level is also a different team, like when Bruno arrived and he was winning game for us.
Well, talking about the Euros, while we're there, how do you think Spain are going to do?
Yeah, I like Spain. I like Spain a lot. I like this generation and the coach. Of course, the problem with Spain is that they're always compared with the team that won the World Cup and the Euros, and that's difficult to handle. I still think they can fight for this trophy. I see other countries like England, France, Portugal with a great generation that they're going to try to win it. But of course, I hope that Spain wins it and they show the quality football that we like to play.
While we are here talking about Spain as well, we've heard La Liga with plans to play some games in the United States. What do you think about playing league games outside of Spain? Do you like it? Are you in favour of it? Or are you against it, Juan?
Yeah, I read it today. I think it's an interesting conversation to have. You know, I think sometimes this dilemma of, okay, do we bring football to the fans that are locally close to the team that they support, or is also good to give the chance to other fans around the world to see the team they love in their own stadium? So I think it has good and bad perspective from my side, but I think football is changing and I'm okay to adapt to new changes. I would like to learn more about what that would mean, playing the La Liga games abroad, how many, at what time, and all these things. But if I guess clubs also have to be agreeing with that, and let's see what happens. I think football is changing and nobody can stop that. So it's about adapting. And what I like is that this change is going to, or hopefully is going to bring football closer to the people. And that's what I love. I don't like when football gets distance with the real important stakeholder of our sport, which is the fans. So hopefully we can always remember that when we make the decisions. That's what I hope.
Any more difficult questions for Juan L.A.?
Well, I want to know what Juan is up to. I know that he's promoting this, but is he a player still, or he crossed over to our side, or he's a promoter nowadays? What are you doing, Juan?
I wouldn't dare to take your chair, that's for sure. I want to still play. I played after Manchester. I was in Turkey with Galatasaray, and then I moved to Japan. So I'm enjoying a lot of experiences through football, which I like. I manage also to win both leagues, so I've been lucky with that. And I still want to play. I'm taking my time to decide where and what project motivates me, but I still feel that I want to enjoy on the pitch, on the training every day, but especially on the games. So yes, I'm waiting, listening to options and waiting to decide the right moment for me, which is probably the last decision of my professional career, and I can do it in a very meaningful way.
I got to tell you, Juan, Manchester United are not going to let you go as a spokesperson, because you managed to make Manchester United sound like everything is great. At Manchester United.
I don't want to do that, and I acknowledge the reality and the different challenges, but I also think, you know, we should look at the positive, and you should look at them too.
Juan, you are welcome anytime in his seat, believe me.
You're not getting my resources anymore, Juan.
Thank you so much for being with us, and enjoy the tour. We really do wish you the best for the future. This is how things are looking for the summer schedule. Arsenal in LA, Real Betis in San Diego, and Liverpool in Colombia, August 3rd for that game. It's a very packed summer. And tickets for the July 31st match are now on sale through Ticketmaster. Fans who purchase two or more tickets using code MATTER24 will be entered into a competition to win a VIP matchday experience to watch the match with a Manchester United legend, including two all-inclusive suite tickets, a round trip in black car service to and from the match, pre-game sideline access, pre-game pitchside photos with Man United legends, and the opportunity to participate in the pre-match coin toss. You can access ticket sales through this QR code. And as for Chelsea, you can also use another QR code that we do have to get tickets to see Chelsea Wrexham on July 24th at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. Make sure to check out that QR code if that is of interest to you.
I'll check it out.
Very busy. We're not allowed to check.
Friday
through Sunday, NWSL schedule looks like this. It's a busy weekend of games, and the channels where you can see these games are as follows. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, when we take a look at the top of La Liga, Barcelona may have slipped even more points behind Real Madrid after last weekend's Clásico loss, but Xavi will have a chance to go again for next year's title because he's made a U-turn on his decision to leave and is going to stay on. He explained why today.
Yo tomo la decisión por el bien del club. Pienso que mi decisión en aquel momento va a mejorar en todos los aspectos. A nivel psicológico, a nivel incluso físico, a nivel de grupo, a nivel de club, de tranquilidad para trabajar, ¿no? Por eso la decisión. Y ahora las circunstancias han cambiado. El año que viene pues tendremos que lidiar si la situación va mal con todo esto. Pero conozco el club, no era el motivo principal el entorno ni la presión, si no ya no hubiera empezado este cargo, ¿no? Sigo con la máxima ilusión, pienso que el proyecto no está terminado, así lo siento de verdad, de corazón, no puedo engañar ni a los socios ni a los culés y lo vamos a dar todo.
Thoughts, Ale?
I'll take him at his word, right? But if I'm going to do that, when he announced that he was leaving at the end of the season, he did say that, look, this is not an emotional decision. This is something that I've thought about, that I've given a lot of thought, that I've taken a lot of time in thinking about this and really picturing what would be best for me and for the club. And back then, his decision was, I'm out. Right? I've had enough of whatever is going on in Barcelona. I've had enough, and I think the club will benefit from my absence. Because if you decide to walk away, it's because essentially you're saying the club is going to be better off without me, and I'm going to be better off without the club. What has happened for that to change dramatically? I don't think anything has really changed at Barcelona. And while the results have been better over the last 6 weeks, and people like to fit into this narrative that the team has been better since his decision, what a genius Xavi is. Again, I repeat, if you're saying that you leaving is better for the club, you're essentially saying me leaving means the team is going to be better. They're better off without me. So how could that be an improvement in terms of the last 6 weeks of play? And how can that be a direct result of that announcement? It never was. That to me was a convenient narrative that people would like to get behind. The other thing I would say, when I look at the whole picture of Barcelona and you really evaluate and you kind of analyze this objectively, you have to say, this is not about Xavi. This is not about changing the situation. This is not about the level of play of the team over the last 6 weeks. This has much more to do with the fact that Barcelona has their hands tied because financially they're all over the place. And so they're not in a position where they can go out in the market and get whatever the best, hottest coaching property is out there, because they cannot negotiate like other clubs can. They just don't have that power. And so they're going to stay in-house. They look around and they say, Rafa Márquez is the next best option. And then they put Rafa Márquez side by side with Xavi, and they kind of go, well, if it's Rafa Márquez or Xavi, Xavi did win a title with us, so I suppose we'll just keep Xavi. That's what this sounds like. We can explain it however they want to explain it, and however Xavi has gone on to explain it, and Laporta will explain it, and they all say, well, you know, I mean, this was part of the plans. It wasn't. Xavi himself told us that this wasn't part of the plan. Now it's a change. What happens when 3, 2, 3, 4 weeks into the season, they're struggling next year? Are we going to have the same conversation once again? Is he going to tell us that he's leaving at the end of the season again? That's going to change the way that the team plays again. Once you make the decision to go, I don't think you come back.
Xhaka?
I don't understand it for a number of reasons. And first of all, when Xavi first announced that he was leaving the club, he looked a broken man.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of who you support, knowing Xavi as a player, knowing what he meant to that club and what that club meant to him, I thought that was heartbreaking to witness. And clearly it wasn't a decision taken lightly. I'm not sure what's changed since then. I'm not sure what's expected to change in the next 12 months that somehow makes Xavi staying on or makes that period so easily forgotten, so quickly forgotten. That for me just doesn't add up. And to Ali's point, while Barcelona may not be in a position to be able to negotiate with another club for another manager, do we expect anything to be different in 12 months' time? I'm not sure that it is. So unless Barcelona are boxing themselves into this corner that it's Xavi until we can figure out our finances, then again, that makes even less sense given how broken he looked, 6, 8 weeks ago.
If you look at it from a brighter perspective, there are some really good young players to build around. Kubasi, Lamine Yamal, you've got the likes of Pedri and Gavi. Is this a good thing for those players that Xavi continues?
Well, I suppose so, but those guys are going to play regardless of who comes in. Whatever the manager that came in for Barcelona, if indeed wasn't going to be Xavi, if you're benching Lamine Yamal, you might as well pack your bags and go home again, right? No, we don't need you at Barcelona if you're going to bench Lamine Yamal, because he is indeed seemingly the future of the club. The young players are going to feature partly because, guess what? Again, financially, they cannot go get some of the biggest, most talented players in the world. So they depend on these younger guys coming through and actually having an impact. They stumble, and I mean stumble upon Pau Cubarsí, because they tried everybody in that position. Koundé played there, Ronald Araujo, Christensen, Íñigo Martínez. They have played Frankie de Jong there, Sergio Roberto there. You name it. And Pau Cubarsí was like, well, I guess I'll play. And he has been great. He has been outstanding. But it's not like Pau Cubarsí was part of our plans all along. No. You're not going to sell me on that now. Because if that was the case, you would have played him from the very beginning of the season when this team was struggling. And I mean mightily struggling defensively. And that's part of my concern about Xavi and Barcelona and this continuing relationship. This team has been struggling in the same areas of the field for the course of the season. And nothing has really been done to address it. Pau Cubarsí became a solution out of nowhere. And that sort of gave some consistency in that back line. But it wasn't because the structure of the team changed or the level of play defensively changed, or we're going to make some changes tactically, or we're going to address the lack of defending on the left-hand side by Joao Cancelo. And you see it happening time and time and time again, and no changes are made, no adjustment made. And that coincides with the time that you're talking about, Shaq, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. When Xavi made that announcement, he was done. He was done. He was done with Barcelona. He was done with everything. Yes, broken is a good way to describe it, but he looked like a guy who was disillusioned with the fact that
He had been the player that he had been for Barcelona, had brought a title, La Liga title last season, and then about 2 months into the season, everybody had forgotten about that. And everybody was on top of Xavi, the press in Barcelona mainly, putting all sorts of pressure on Xavi, saying all sorts of things about Xavi, analyzing how broken the team was. And his reaction was, I got to get out of here. What do you think is going to happen if they struggle? The pressure is going to come back. The only way that pressure goes away, if it ever goes away at a club like Barcelona, is consistently winning. Consistently winning. And that will never change. And if you're not winning, all the murmurs will begin. And all the rumors will begin. And now they're looking for the next guy. And who's going to come? And Xavi's going to leave. And all those things are never going to go away unless you win consistently. And how are you going to win consistently? With a high level of performance. Is there a consistent level of performance for Barcelona based on what we have seen this season? I don't think so.
Well, let's see what's left for the rest of the season for Barcelona. They will be in action on Monday against Valencia, but things get underway bright and early on Friday because it's Real Sociedad taking on Real Madrid. We'll have full wraparound coverage of those games, so be sure to be with us. All season long, viewers have been taking part in our La Liga sweepstakes on ESPN+. And we sent Ali Krieger and the sweepstakes winners, Alexa Golub and her son Bradley from Malta, New Jersey, to San Sebastian in Spain to attend tomorrow's Real Sociedad-Real Madrid match and enjoy a tour of La Real Stadium. Ali was also able to find time to take part in a training session with La Real's women's team and then sit down with Real Sociedad midfield star Mikel Merino ahead of the game.
Mikel, thank you so much for joining me today. You've played in Germany and obviously England as well. And through those experiences, what do you find that's different or even comparable to La Liga?
Well, I think the love for the game is the main similarity, but there are a lot of differences, not only in the football aspect, but in the culture, in the people, in the countries. I think here in Spain, the football style is way different than what you have in Premier League or what you have in Bundesliga. Here is more about controlling the ball, controlling the tempo of the game, using your teammates to elaborate the play. And in Germany or in Premier League, it's more of a physical league, more quick playing. The fans want you to cross the ball as soon as you get it or create a chance as soon as you can. So, I mean, I have been very lucky in my career so far because I've been in amazing places, beautiful countries, and I've learned a lot. But I'm really happy here now. I am in an amazing city with an amazing team and, well, an amazing league as well.
Yeah. You mentioned Champions League. Obviously, how was the experience playing there? And the team did well before, you know, unfortunately losing to PSG. But how was that experience this season in the Champions League for you?
It's been amazing. It's been amazing for us to be able to be on the pitch, you know, listening to the song of the Champions League, and everything is a dream come true. It's something you dream from when you are a little boy. So I think we made an amazing year. We were unlucky in to be facing PSG.
Do you think they could go all the way now that they're in the semifinals? Do you think they could win it all? Or what are your expectations?
For sure. I think they have an amazing team, an amazing coach. They play the right way with the ball, without the ball. They are a very strong team. They press the whole game. And you can see they have a lot of individual quality as well, with Mbappé, with Dembélé, all these players that can, you know, make a big play in a big moment. So they have everything, they have the tools to go all the way and to win it. But, you know, in these big games, the small details are very, very important, so you never know what's going to happen.
Right, and we talk about big players, big moments, big games, big teams, and more importantly this weekend on Friday you're playing Real Madrid. Obviously they've had, you know, a very difficult stretch of games between City and winning a Clásico recently in the semifinal, obviously next week versus Bayern. Is there an opportunity that maybe, you know, they might underestimate this game against you this Friday or not?
Well, you never know.
It might be a small chance.
They're all huge competitors. It doesn't matter if they play with the main squad or maybe the players who are not playing normally, they come in. It doesn't matter. They are all competitors. They want to win. They're used to play every single game to win because they have a lot of pressure. You know, I think wearing the Real Madrid badge makes you need to win every game. They're used to play against big teams. Now, as you said, City, Barcelona. Now Bayern is coming up. So, I mean, I don't think they're gonna underestimate us. They know what we are capable of. And we know that whoever plays is going to do an amazing job in the team and in our team. So it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a beautiful game as well for the fans, for us. This is the kind of matches that we all love to play against the best players to, you know, to see if we are at that level or not, because we are the level we want to reach one day.
And lastly, this is my first time here. What would you suggest that I do off the field that's, you know, fun, or any restaurants or anything that you would suggest that we kind of go explore and visit?
Well, I think you're lucky because you're in an amazing city. It depends a little bit on the weather, because here normally it rains a lot. But I recommend you to go walk, just see the city center. It's amazing to see the beaches, La Concha. It's an amazing view there. And if you like food, I mean, this is one of the best places in the country to eat. You have
tapas. I need some tapas.
Tapas,
my favorite.
Or chuleta. I don't know if you know that.
No, I
meat
don't know
is
that.
An amazing.
Okay.
I mean, whatever you choose here, whatever place you want, is going to be a good choice.
Well, Ali, we get to sit in the studio and watch it tomorrow together.
So no pinchos, no tapas, no chuleta, no nothing for
none
us.
None of those things. Real Sociedad against Real Madrid. Ali and I with all the build-up to that game tomorrow. Coverage beginning at 2:30 right here on ESPN+. A lot more chat about La Liga and everything else that's going on in the world of football over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check that out and click subscribe while you're there.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Feyenoord have been all over the sports headlines, though, as mentioned, these last few days, because it looks as though their head coach, Arne Slot, could be Jurgen Klopp's successor at Liverpool. This via our ESPN colleagues in the Netherlands. This is Arne Slot responding to them, saying, "The only thing I can say about it is that the clubs are in negotiations, and then you sit in the waiting room and wait for what will come out. It seems clear to me that I would like to go to Liverpool. Now I'm waiting to see whether the clubs reach an agreement. I'm very confident in that." This is his managerial career as we take a look at things. The Dutchman's 45 years old. He won the Eredivisie in the 22-23 season with Feyenoord and the Dutch Cup the following season. His playing style is said to be one of the key criteria that Liverpool have been looking for. And there's been more talk about this on the latest Gab and Jules podcast.
I'm sure there's lots of people writing profiles of Arne Slot and what he's going to bring to Liverpool. Obviously, he was a player. Really got on the radar, I think, at Feyenoord, where they lost the Europa Conference League final.
Yeah, the
final
last 3 years. There was
to Roma.
Yeah.
Famously, put it this way, he's not Jose Mourinho's favorite guy. They really do not like each other.
No, I mean, they're so extreme. Like, they're two extremes, aren't they?
But just to give a sense of how spoken he is, I think it was after they played each other in the Europa League, where he said something like, "Oh, I mean, I am paraphrasing here, so, you know, sorry, Arne, if I get this wrong. But it was something like, I don't enjoy the way his teams play. His football, we've talked about, is very attacking-oriented, but maybe even more so than Klopp's in terms of the
not so much the press, but Eredivisie, though.
Well, they played that way in the Champions League a lot,
too.
Yeah,
but
and in Europe, you know, with the runners from the midfield as well as the front men.
Yeah, I just think I don't think you could do that in the Premier League that much. So I think this is clearly the philosophy and the style, and it's great and it's very entertaining to watch. But I would expect him to just tweak it a little bit for the Premier League. I think they played like that in the Champions League this season because this is what they were doing and that was what those players were used to. I think at Liverpool, I just would not be surprised if he just tweaked it a little bit. So he'd be very attacking, he'd be very intense, he'd be with a lot of pressing and counter-pressing, with a lot of running and movement, all of that. But I would expect him to maybe not be as bold as what he did in the Eredivisie.
What do you think, Shaka?
It's a strange one. This kind of came out of left field. That I agree with what Stevie had to say yesterday, that he's not the manager that you automatically think of in replacing Jurgen Klopp. A couple of things come to mind. Is he just a placeholder for Xabi Alonso in a year's time or 2 years' time, whatever that, or whenever that may be? That's a little bit presumptuous, given you are certain that Real Madrid would also be interested. The one defence, if you can call it a defence, is a few years ago we had the Liverpool managing director on set with us at MLS Media Day just after Liverpool hired Jurgen Klopp, and he spoke about, and while that seemed to be a very easy decision, given Jurgen Klopp's record, they did a lot of homework about Jurgen Klopp, about his personality and whether he'd be the right fit for Liverpool Football Club. Now, I can only freely assume that they've done exactly the same with Arne Slot here. And if they have, and if they decided that he is the right man, then I think that kind of, that level of background checking only pays dividends. But for somebody like me, sitting on the outside, not privy to that, it just seems, it seems a little underwhelming.
You remember when Xabi Alonso announced that he was staying at Bayer Leverkusen, and we had this very same conversation with Stevie. Stevie was in the studio that day, and he almost dismissively kind of said, I'm okay. I'm okay with Xabi Alonso staying at Bayer Leverkusen. Look, it would have been great, but I'm okay. I think Liverpool will do their homework and they'll get to the right guy. Paraphrasing, again, using what Guy was saying, that's essentially what Stevie said. I think you were in studio that day. Yeah, well, what is Stevie thinking now? Huh? Because I don't, when he was saying I'm okay, I'm pretty sure, certainty, 100% certainty, he wasn't saying Arne Slot, that's our guy. And I think that may be the reaction from most Liverpool fans, that some of them may just go, huh? Who? What? And beyond that, and it's impossible not to draw parallels. The last sort of big name manager that came from the Eredivisie to a big club in England, it's Erik ten Hag, right? And you see how that's worked out, and it's hard not to have some apprehension because apparently the adjustment takes some time. Now, to be fair, Arne Slot would be coming into a club in a much better situation than Manchester United, with a much better personnel available to the manager, but also with the additional pressure of having to be the guy after Jurgen Klopp. How do you become your own personality, your own guy? How do you communicate your ideas when there's a lack of, lack of belief surrounding the club that you're actually the guy who's capable of doing that? It's a big challenge. Maybe he's the right guy. We'll see. But it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it certainly is. And obviously, we'll continue to talk about this story probably every day from now on. We're getting the coaching.
How's Stevie doing?
Talking about it.
Stevie doing okay?
We'll get Stevie talking about it. Not too well at the moment. The Gavin Jewell Show for a lot more talk on Arne Slot and what's ahead at Liverpool. And the Eredivisie back in action with Becca's favourite team to say.
NEC?
NEC Nijmegen.
There you go.
Against AZ Alkmaar.
I just call them NEC.
Sunday, 6:15 a.m. Eastern, ESPN+.
Where's Go Ahead Eagles when you need them?
Well, that's a lot of an easier one to say. Listen, guys, thank you so much for being with us for the latest edition. We've got more. Frank's back to answer your questions in extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Ali and Cheka and Frank Leboeuf, who sat patiently throughout the show.
Oh, yes.
What a listening man. To everything.
What a man, Frank.
But sadly, the first question
is not
for you,
Frank. Well, that was very interesting,
Frank.
Guys.
What do you think of Arne Slot?
That's all right.
What do you think of Arne Slot, Frank?
Well, I have to say that I didn't have a clue what that guy was, and I agree with Ali. I mean, we want to give him a chance, but yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Ten Hag coming to Manchester United. So it's got to be a big pressure, and being after Jurgen Klopp is a big task. So we'll see.
I thought the balls would unite here.
What?
I thought the balls would unite.
Frank.
I'm glad you didn't put me in that category.
There is no union. There is no union in that matter.
Maybe we could start one. Okay.
Quick question. In all honesty, do you think Juan Mata hates me?
There's very, very high possibility of that.
It's a strong word.
I'm just saying.
He's not taking you out for tapas.
But I gave him all my resources.
Maybe he's seen your resources. Maybe that's the problem.
Yes, he was expecting more.
So we had Juan Mata in the main show earlier today, and let's just say he definitely found Ale to be an interesting character. Maybe not his favourite FC pundit.
Well, I just asked a couple of questions that I thought needed to be asked, and apparently he was uncomfortable with those questions.
If you go on your travels this summer for ESPN FC, let's see if he avoids you or not. That's what we'll tell us.
Let's find out.
Did he say he was going to take over my chair as well?
He said he's not him.
He's not coming for you.
Because by the way, this is Craig's chair. This chair's a little angry. It has a halo of anger around it.
Right. That's what Juan Mata found as well.
All right, Ferrale, who would you say is the breakout star of the year? Lamine Yamal, Kobbie Mainoo, or someone else?
Ooh. Well, Lamine Yamal. Kobbie Mainoo has been great, but Lamine Yamal has given us all the signs of a guy who can potentially be just one of a kind. That's how talented I think he is. In a team that has so much experience and so much talent available in the attacking half, he has been their most dangerous and their most effective player in the final third. Lamine Yamal has been outstanding. Let's hope that Barcelona are able to nurture his talent in the right manner and that he continues to develop. Because if he does develop in the trajectory that we have seen so far, he's going to be some special.
Xhaka, how would you rate Newcastle this season so far on a scale of 1 to 10?
7. And listen, I think in totality it's been a little bit disappointing given what we saw from Newcastle last season, but they had a lot of injuries to contend with this time around. But the truth is, Newcastle is the same points as Manchester United, which, you know, kind of given where they were.
Is that a good thing?
Well, I mean, given where Newcastle was 6 or 8 weeks ago, I thought if you stay in the top half of the table, you've done well. And all of a sudden, they're knocking your door 6.
So 7 out of 10 for United as well?
7 out of 10 for Newcastle.
What about United then? Manchester United?
No, solid 5.
Oh, okay.
Solid.
So that's failing.
Oh, they.
Frank, is Man City better without Haaland?
Oh, that's a harsh question, you know. Haaland is, first he's injured, then he's not having the season that he had last season, but I don't think City had the season, or the end of the season that they had last season, and it's hard to compare. And Haaland needs to be served. Don't forget that De Bruyne has been injured for almost the whole season, and he was the one who was providing the best assist to Haaland. And it's hard to judge. I mean, everybody else who cannot how do you say, built his own action, his own chances, would have suffered like Alan does this season. So I wouldn't answer to that because I don't know. It's the second season. He had a wonderful, fantastic season last season. He's been suffering this one. But give me another season and maybe I can answer that one.
Can I just give a little bit of context to a comment that Frank made in the earlier part of the show, and I just forgot to address it back then. He mentioned the Van Persie goal.
Yeah.
There's Van Persie goal in the 2014 World Cup, Spain against the Netherlands. Just you know, just in case people were saying, what Van Persie goal? That Van Persie goal.
That one.
I'm just saying.
Were you there?
Spot
I was
on.
Not.
Spot
I was,
on
I was there.
I was in the press room in some other stadium about right. to do another game, but no, I was not there.
I was there, Frankie. I knew that's what you meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a good goal, though,
well
wasn't
done.
It?
Well done. It was. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yes.
He kind
Thank
of left
you for
out,
that.
Huh? Carry on.
Did you know that he meant that goal?
Yes, I knew which goal he meant.
Well, don't feel
I'm
left out
there. Just saying,
then.
You know. Just
he wasn't there.
2014 was a while back, Shaq. You know how you are.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Carry on.
All right, for Ale, do you think that Klopp's time at Liverpool is actually overrated? The only cup he won more than once is the Carabao Cup. Multiple European finals lost. Now this title collapse? Am I being reactionary?
I honestly have to question the group of people or the individual who chose this question as a valid question to be asked in extra time. We can do better. We should do better. I'm just saying. You cannot define Jurgen Klopp's time at Liverpool as overrated. Properly rated, he was and they were outstanding during his time. Won everything there is to win. What else do you want? We can do better.
And I'll add to in with against. So you talk about only winning one league title because Manchester City, who many would argue is the greatest team that the Premier League has seen. Make what you like of that. That's totally up for debate. And a Real Madrid team that dominated the Champions League like no other has in the past. Yet it was Liverpool who was pushing, or when they didn't win it, it was Liverpool who were pushing both those teams all the way. I'm with Ali in saying that this question is out of place.
Okay.
And it takes a lot to be out of place in extra time.
We tell people, send your questions in. That was Shab's question.
No, well, and look, I'm all for Shab sending the question. I'm just saying, when we go through the filtering of questions...
Oh, you have an issue with the filter.
Yeah. Oh. We can do better.
All right. Okay. With Madrid's squad improving, return of injured players, and impending Mbappe
By the
arrival...
Way, the producer's telling me that I'm blaming. I'm shifting blame. Go ahead, Kay.
With Madrid's squad improving, along with the unyielding Catalan media and Deco/Laporta, what is the upside to Xavi returning to Barcelona? Do you want to take that, Ale?
He looks happier.
Well,
he looks happier today than he did 6 weeks ago.
Got the little hand.
Yeah, well,
little hand thing together.
What a weird little handshake that was. I put it in the middle doing something like this. That was just weird. That's the only upside I can see.
And Deco's coming from afar. Oh my God.
So give us the upside.
Huh?
Give us the upside.
For what?
Xavi, continue him.
Well, continuity, that's always... Hold on a second. This thing is getting all over the place.
Oh, you know what? While you sort that out,
because... I'm going to get for criticizing the
producer. Frank wasn't in the part of the show where we talked about Xavi staying on. What do you think of it, Frank? Xavi staying at Barcelona?
Well, I said yesterday that I was quite pleased. I mean, he represents... He's an icon of Barcelona and the Spanish football. And I want to see him, you know. Last season, he won the La Liga. So he had a very good first season. It was harder this season, but I was sad when I heard that he wanted to leave. So for any reason, and I listened to your debate and your explanation, and I agree with Ali. I think it's more a club decision than Xavi decision. But I'm happy to see him fighting against with the Catalan club and trying to repair what was a little bit falling this season comparing to the first season that he was in charge?
Here is an upside for Xavi. He now has an opportunity to walk out the club through the front door rather than the back door, which is what was going to happen at the end of this season. He has an opportunity. I don't know that it's actually going to come to fruition, that it's actually going to happen, but he does have the chance to now put a team together and put his ideas in place and execute those ideas properly and defend well. He has time now to make sure he walks out the club the way that he thinks he deserves.
Frank, who's winning the Player of the Year, Phil Foden or Cole Palmer?
Well, it's like the Ballon d'Or. Can I say that I don't care about that? I don't give the stuff, like Craig would say. You know what? Phil Foden plays for a fantastic team, and when you are inside that kind of team, you know, all your talent is multiplied by maybe two or three times. And Foden is a fantastic player, and maybe deserve that. But what Cole Palmer was able or is able to do with a shamble, and that's again a Craig word, a team who suffer, I have to give him credit. I think it's a real fit what Palmer is capable of showing to the world, and I think he deserves something special for that.
Cole Palmer got honorable mention. More times than not, Player of the Year goes to the team that wins the league. If City win the league, I think Phil Foden gets it. If Arsenal wins the league, Declan Rice gets
it.
Cole Palmer, outstanding season, but by that measure, I don't think he pips either of those two.
If you ask the question to Nicholas Jackson or Madueke, would they say Phil Foden?
They'd miss. They missed the question. Yes, we're going to miss.
All right, Shaka, as an expert in vacations and nights out, would you rather have a night out in Middlesbrough, Paris, or Barquisimeto?
Uh-oh. Vamos, Venezuela! Hey, that's where I was born, yeah. Shaq.
That's your own stomping ground.
That's when I was
born. I'm not sure I'm going to
have
your
stomping
ground.
In case you didn't know, Shaq, that's where I was born, Middlesbrough.
Yeah, I by a matter of elimination, it'll be Paris.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Hey, man.
Ali's stomping old stomping ground.
Hey, Shaq.
I'll leave that there.
Shaq. Barquisimeto can be nice. You like Barquisimeto, yeah. Shaq, yeah?
Yeah.
We can get you to places, Shaq.
You know what? Shaka. Shaka. Shaka, you gave the right answer. You know what? Because we'll go to the restaurant together. That will be on me. Where if you go to the two other places, I'm not sure you can find one restaurant. That's the problem.
No.
Wow. See, now that's...
But I love the two faces. I love the two faces.
Kay just keeps talking.
I should have taken a picture on two faces.
I have no idea what Palmo is. I'm not. I don't think I want to know what a Palmo is.
Maybe,
that's all.
Maybe you're not allowed back in Middlesbrough after the carnage you caused on nights out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You and your teammates.
I don't know. I've never been to Middlesbrough.
Wow. Just before we do go, we must mention that somebody was helping Juan Mata set up for the show today.
Yes.
And they dropped the old, oh, really great to meet you, Shaka. I grew up watching.
Yes. Way back.
Thank you.
Way back. And Callum wasn't a kid either.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't 12. He wasn't
a young guy.
Absolutely not. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Shaka,
thank
his
you
love.
Very much.
Legendary status.
Your inspiration to generations before ours.
Thank you so much.
Multiple generations.
Thanks to Callum. And thanks also
get off the stage
to Shab for sending in that question.
Shab.
And Juan Mata.
And the filter.
Whatever you're doing, Juan.
Juan Mata.
Whatever you're doing, Juan.
Juan Mata's Player of the Year.